Every time we turn to Christ in faith, it's like a moment of Sabbath, a little foretaste of eternal rest and glory. Welcome everyone, I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Our host is author, teacher, and itinerant speaker, Kenneth Wong. You know, an overarching principle is that rest, Sabbath rest, will undergird all our work. In other words, we work from rest and not just for rest. And so we can confidently say that every time we turn to Christ in faith, it's like a moment of Sabbath, a little foretaste of eternal rest and glory. With more, here is Kenneth Wong with part two of Take a Rest.
Hello everyone, it's good to be with you. I hope you have had a more restful day from trying to resist the spirit of haste, as we have talked about it yesterday, even if the day seems tougher and busier than ever before. Well, perhaps we are not quite there yet, but that's the first important step, to recognize what it should not be, the negative aspect. So today I'm going on to the positive aspect of our talk on take a rest, on spiritual rest. And I would like to deal with what the spirit of rest really is, so that we can actually enter into it and take possession of it in practice and experience. And for this, we are going to turn today into the New Testament, where our principal passage is from Hebrews chapters 3 and 4, which major on the subject of spiritual rest. And this is going to be our key verse in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 9. There remains, therefore, a rest for the people of God. What a lucid, plain, and direct statement that is. There remains, therefore, a rest for the people of God. In fact, it is so plain and direct that it may catch some of us by surprise. It suggests that there is something called rest that still remains for the people of God. It's still there and available for us, but which it seems many of God's people have forfeited or lost or done without. We have grown so accustomed and used to the spirit of haste in the world that this rest of faith with which we are born seems an altogether alien concept to us now. It's supposed to be foundational to our faith, but has become optional for some and totally neglected by others. And so here the writer to the Hebrews is spending two whole chapters to try to re-examine and recover the concept or principle of rest as a foundation of our faith. And the clarion call comes down to us as to the Hebrews to whom he first wrote. There remains therefore a rest for the people of God. Do we as the people of God know that there is such a thing as rest and it still remains for us to inherit and to possess? And some may even say, what rest? We have never even heard of such a thing as this. So this is news to many people. The first important thing that I want us to know about this rest is that it is God's rest. This is reiterated in no uncertain terms. First, three times the phrase, my rest, is used. In Hebrews chapter 3, verse 11, and then in chapter 4, verses 3 and 5. And then another three times this phrase is used, his rest. In Hebrews chapter 3, verse 18, in chapter 4, verses 1 and 10. So six times, that's a lot of times to reiterate the fact that it is God's rest. We're not talking about rest as an end in itself, but we're talking about the source of rest, which is God. And this becomes the basis for continued working. This is not the normal notion of resting when we are tired, when we are ready to quit working, but rather of rest as a spring of action, rest as a basis of our work. We tend to think of rest as something which follows work, something that comes after the work is done, when it's completed, and then comes time for rest. Whereas the biblical principle of rest seems to be quite opposite. We normally rest because we are tired or worn out. But rest should also undergird all our doing, so that we work from the position of rest and not just work for rest. And this is the principle of the Sabbath rest, which is what is referred to by the writer to the Hebrews here. He says at the beginning of chapter 4 of Hebrews, "Therefore, since a promise remains of entering His rest, let us fear lest any of you seem to have come short of it. For indeed the gospel was preached to us as well as to them, but the word which they heard did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in those who heard it. For we who have believed do enter that rest, as He has said, 'So I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest.' Although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. For He has spoken in a certain place of the seventh day in this way, 'And God rested on the seventh day from all His works.' And again in this place, 'They shall not enter my rest.'" We usually think of Bible history beginning with God actively at work in the creation account of Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1 verse 1 starts this way: "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." But God was already there before He started creating. In the beginning, God. And then He created. So God was there before He started creating the world. But then what was God doing before He actually started creating the world? He was at rest before creation, and He returned to His rest on the completion of creation, as we have read on the seventh day. After 6 days in which He created the world, we read in Genesis chapter 2 verse 2, "And on the seventh day, God ended His work which He had done, and He rested on the seventh day from all His work which He had done." And even during all the 6 days of creation, we find that there is a daily rhythm of resting and creating, of evening and morning. We come across that repetitive descriptive phrase. "So the evening and the morning were the second day and the third day," and so on. So God is a God of rest. And whenever He works from the position of rest, as He did during the creation. And the practical question for us too is, do we know an end to our work? Do we know when to stop and to rest? There is some sense in which work can never end. And if there's some truth in that, it is even more important for us to recognize that, likewise, rest must never end. Our ability and capacity to work will ultimately break down at some point and give way if we do not have this spirit of rest in us, and if we fail to maintain that balance in the daily rhythm of alternating between resting and working or creating. Well, now let's consider the practical question of how do we enter into His rest, as dealt with by the writer to the Hebrews in chapters 3 and 4. We have just read from verse 1 of chapter 4, which begins with a warning or an exhortation. "Therefore, since a promise remains of entering His rest, let us fear lest any of you seem to have come short of it." So here is a promise of entering His rest. Let us really understand what it is so that we will not fail to enter it and to take possession of it in our own experience. The exhortation there is, let us fear. In other words, let us not take for granted. Let's consider this thing carefully or seriously, because otherwise we will be in danger of missing out or forfeiting the promise that has been left us. We don't want to leave this great promise of rest unclaimed and unrealized, just like in the lost and found box. Beware of the procrastinating tendency and mentality which says, "One fine day, but not now, not yet. I'm just too busy now, there is no time." But in so doing, you really are selling yourself short, because you are actually losing and wasting more time. Beware of this fallacy and danger of always being on the brink, just on the threshold, but never really entering in fully to take possession. You know it in theory, but not in experience. And if that's the case, you don't really know it at all. The reference to entering in is mentioned so many times in these two chapters of Hebrews that we cannot fail to take notice of it. This is the big thing, the all-important thing, to enter into his rest. We find this phrase, entering in, referred to in Hebrews chapter 3, verses 11, 18, 19, and then in chapter 4, verses 1, 3, 5, 6, 10, and 11, some of them occurring twice in a single verse, 11 times in all. It expresses God's great grief with the children of Israel for having failed to enter in when they should have done. This is the Exodus generation, the generation X of that time, EX for Exodus. Because of their failure to enter into the promised land straight away, because of unbelief and disobedience, they paid the price for that unbelief and suffered the consequences by wandering for the next 40 years in the wilderness. It's difficult to imagine when you are tramping around in the wilderness and not having really seen what's on the other side, in the land that God had promised, except that you take it by faith. But from where we are, on hindsight and taking a larger historical perspective, it's really an incredulous thing to see this whole nation of Israel wandering up and down and all around in circles in the wilderness for an entire generation of 40 years, when all the time the riches of the promised land flowing with milk and honey awaited their entrance and taking possession. Well, it's always easier to see it in other people's lives. But the real and present danger lies here for us too. We can be blind to our own unbelief. Unbelief and disobedience is what kept them out of the promised land. And it's the same thing, unbelief and disobedience, that can keep us out from realizing in actual experience this promised principle of spiritual rest. This is a rest of faith, not of the body and the mind, although the effects on these will surely follow. So when we hear this today, let us fear. Let's not come short, but let us hear the word and mix it with faith so that we can receive it. And it's to those who believe who will enter into that rest in experience. So that's the first exhortation, or let us, in verse 1. Let us fear. But here is another one in verse 11. Let us, therefore, be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall according to the same example of disobedience. This is a call and exhortation to be diligent or to labor to enter into that rest. Now that sounds pretty much like a contradiction of terms. You labor in order to rest? That's right. Remember the rhythm between rest and work. We have to make every effort. We have to work on it to keep the spirit of haste out and to make sure that we continue to operate on the spirit and principle of rest. This does not refer to sweating or agonizing in self-effort, but rather it refers to being urgent and deliberate about it. How do we do that? How do we labor to enter into that rest? It may involve, for example, by deliberately pausing and waiting instead of driving on recklessly. We may need to take time out to re-evaluate our priorities, to re-examine the basis of all that we are doing, and to return to his rest, where quietness and confidence is our strength. The crux of the matter really is about ceasing from our own works, as it says in Hebrews 4:10. For he who has entered his rest has himself also ceased from his works, as God did from his. We are not to cease from working, but we are to cease from self-works. The great difference lies between self or God as the basis and the motivation for our works. Can we relinquish control and hand over completely to God? This is not passivity or inactivity, but rather it is dependent activity. We are not an activist for ourselves, but we are an activist in and for God. We sometimes write at the end of a letter, "Yours truly," and that is the idea here. It is God's truly and not mine. Can we really turn over everything fully to Christ so that He has the full ownership? It takes away all manner of distraction and competition. He's the sole owner and the sole focus, and simplicity always makes it easier to rest. We hear this repeated quotation from the Old Testament from Psalm 95 in these two chapters of Hebrews. Today, if you will hear His voice, do not harden your hearts. It's in chapter 3, verse 7, and again in verse 13 and 15, and once again in chapter 4, verse 7. The importance and the imperative of it is inescapable. The emphasis here is on what we will do about what we hear from the Word of God today. Immediate obedience always makes it easier, while procrastination of action always makes it harder. And this is especially critical when we're talking about the spirit of haste versus the spirit of rest. It is so easy to let the tyranny of the urgent and of the immediate override what is fundamentally more important in the long run. Our hearts and attitudes have a way of becoming hardened over time if we persist stubbornly in maintaining the status quo. The real recipe for change is always a radical response to the word that God has brought home to our hearts by the Holy Spirit. If you have ever done a little bit of snorkeling, you will be introduced to a spectacular and beautiful underwater world full of serenity and tranquility, even when the waves may be a little rough at the surface. This is the phenomenon of the calm of the ocean beneath the surface, which is a powerful picture of the rest that comes with depth. It may be howling and raging with wild waves at the water surface because the weather is rough. But the wonderful thing is that the deeper down you go, the more peaceful and restful and tranquil it becomes. And this is both a physical as well as a spiritual phenomenon. Rest increases with depth. If you measure the speed of waves, you will find an exponential decrease of wave speed as you go deeper down. So the implication is obvious. If we want to experience more of that inward rest, the way to go is to have deeper communion with God. It's always a great blessing to see and to know a man or a ministry which is marked by spiritual depth and spiritual rest. How far different this is from what often comes across as apparently powerful, loud and brash, but in reality is really nothing more than froth and bubble. It's all shallow and superficial. So stop splashing around and paddling in the shallows. Forget about trying to make waves, but instead launch out into the deep so that there is greater communion with God. Do not neglect the regular times of solitude with God, because that is where we begin to enter into His rest. Do we know how to spend some times of holy leisure with God? With no fixed agenda or particular business, but simply to enjoy His presence. There is a unique Hebrew word used in some of the Psalms. In fact, in 12 of the Psalms, it's called sila, and they indicate a pause to reflect and to meditate. It's very much just like a musical pause where we have terms like whole rest, half rest, and so on. And it's interesting to note also that the silas occur mainly in the deliverance psalms. So it's in the midst of much trying and tight situations that the need is even greater to retreat into the depth and the quiet of communing with God, so that we come forth rejuvenated with the spirit of rest instead of being overwhelmed by the spirit of haste. You find both in musical as well as in oratorical or speech presentations, that a strategically timed pause can make a tremendous difference and impact. And so it is with spiritual seasons of retreat, which can have a powerful influence on the outcome of a tense or tight situation. They are not to be regarded as interruptions, but rather for invigoration. And if we move in rest, we will not be holding on to life so tightly that we might smother it or even kill it. It's just like cupping a little chick in our hands. We need to grip it gently and lightly. so that life will be a pleasure and not a terror. And may this be your portion as you allow God to continue to refresh you by His presence and to reach you by His Word.
Forget about trying to make waves and launch out into the deep for greater communion with God. Don't neglect regular times of solitude with God in holy leisure, with no fixed agenda or business. Thank you for that, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And I invite you to join us again tomorrow at this same time. You know, we always enjoy hearing from you, our listeners, and for taking the time to share your comments on the program with us, we are extending the offer we made last week. Gary Weeks is going to be our guest speaker again on Wednesday, and so in celebration of that, we are extending the offer because Gary, in addition to being a minister of the Word, is also a singer-songwriter, and he has graciously made his CD called Eternity available to us for free distribution to our Times of Refreshing listeners. Well, you can get your free Gary Weeks CD simply by contacting us by SMS. The number is 9431-3813, or by sending an email to info@timesofrefreshing.asia, or by writing to us at Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road Post Office, Singapore, 915714. Just give us your name and your address, and we'll get the CD Eternity to you as a thank you from us. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again next time for Times of Refreshing.